This episode is brought to you by Masterworks, where Masterworks invites you to join an exclusive community investing in blue chip art. Go to masterworks.io and use promo code TDI.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets take another leg down, led by technology shares. In just about 50 days until the election, still no serious plan from either party. Fauci says we won't get back to normal, well, until late 2021. Ugh. All this and much more on episode number 679 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Anyway, good day to you. I'm Andrew Horowitz. Thank you for all your really kind comments and all the great email that you sent us on the last couple of episodes. Seems that we really had some great guests on, some great discussions, particularly with Paul Barron regarding the whole idea of what's going on in the restaurant and retail and leisure and travel industry. And that, again, just butts up against the latest, what we're hearing from Dr. Fauci about, hey, you know what? We're not going to see normality. Now, obviously, there's a range of thoughts on what he's talking about. Are we going to be getting closer to it and just like the last remnants of the crazy lockdowns and virus-related kind of activity where we have to socially distance? It's going to be there till the end or late of 2021. Or is he saying that, hey, you know what? It's going to be kind of like this until that date. So I think there's kind of some gray inside of that, and you can go through what does that really mean. But I think he's being very conservative in his thoughts and trying to make sure that people understand that you got to do what it takes in order to beat this thing, even if somehow miraculously we do get a vaccine sooner than later. Fact is that lots are going on in the vaccine world as well. But, I think that it is right now a very concerning time because we're on the edge of it getting a little bit better. Markets are saying, hey, you know what? Well, we may be getting better. Let's start thinking about selling off all of those trades, all of those particular stocks that really would do well during, well, a pandemic and lockdowns and the transformation from working at an office to working at home. So we have a lot to talk about, and I don't know if it's just me this week, but it seems like there's a lot of really interesting things that are going on that we're seeing in markets in terms of not just the sell-off in tech shares, which of course has been rather dramatic, to say the least, and some of it is deserved. I mean, I don't wish anybody to lose any money on any investment ever, but let's be very honest, right? We did get that big kickback. The corrective action started last week or so, or maybe even the week before that, in some of the names that really didn't deserve to see the kind of move that they saw in the couple, 3 weeks before that. And what we have is corrective action, correcting the mistake that was made by the markets, by people, by investors to push up these stocks in a way that was really unjustified. And I think I talked about this last week, the whole idea of we spent so much time over the last few months trying to justify the unjustifiable. We got to a point that we tried to come up with, not us, not here, when I say we, I'm talking about the collective we out there, the collective investment universe of people, the talking heads, right? Not us. We've talked about this here. You've talked about it with me. I've talked about it with you, the ridiculous nature of how we are seeing such an expansion of price multiples And trying to justify it was the job of everybody that wanted to maintain a bullish stance in the face of what was not justifiable, which was and still remains to be extraordinary levels of earnings multiple expansions. In other words, prices to earnings are insane on some areas. And trying to come up with a reason, an excuse, something, I mean, it's a fruitless plan. Because what we do see, whether it's the harsh sell-off that we saw with tech shares over the last couple of weeks, or whether it's something a little bit slower and more, I would say, palatable, well, it's going to correct eventually. We talked about one of two things have to happen. Either markets need to come down so that the P.E. ratios come back to normal levels, or earnings have to expand so much that we have the P.E.s that normally will fit. So we're going to squeeze the earnings into the price. But that takes a very long time, and the level of ascension that we saw, the vertical and parabolic move that we saw on the markets, and many individual stocks, really, not so much markets, but individual names, it would be almost impossible. Do you remember back, I'm going a little bit off script, the script of what I was thinking about talking about today, but do you remember back in the heyday of desktops, where Dell Computer was continually moving higher, going vertical? It was really quite an amazing situation. And the calculation at one point was that every single person in the United States, and we probably did some calculation out further into the world, but every single person would have to have four PCs on their desk at any given time that they own exclusively for Dell to be leveled at the price that they were relative to the earnings. That made no sense. It was impossible. But again, they were trying to come up with reasoning for what was unreasonable. And that's what markets do. Now, what I wanted to focus on to start with is it's probably going to be a contentious discussion. Contentious with myself, but contentious for your ears. Depending on where you stand on this whole process of how we've done, a scorecard of how we've done as a country in terms of this whole pandemic. Because I saw the most crazy thing that really hit me right in the middle of the eyes. It was like a sledgehammer. I was looking through a variety of different economic numbers and reports that came out and trying to do some comparisons just overall. And something struck me. It was really kind of crazy. It was the differential between Germany and the U.S. in terms of consumer confidence. And it really caught my eye, and I said, what is that all about? What's going on there? So I tried to look at what was happening and what was going on with the country, and I was starting to wonder, you know, could it be the way that we're dealing with the pandemic? Could it be the amount of unemployment? So I looked into those numbers. Interestingly, Germany's at 6.5%, 88 million people in their country. We have 330 million people here. We're at 8.5%, 9%, give or take, on the way down from a very historic level on the upside. Could it be that they have a much more stable political environment? Maybe. We're not there. I'm not there to really tell you that. But something is going on because there's a big difference. We know that there's been a significant amount of stimulus poured in here into the financial markets for stability, also fiscal stimulus to make sure that people are able to live and spend on things that they need. Same thing in Europe and Germany. But again, their unemployment rate, 6.5%, up from about 4.5%. Much different situation. Now, I know there's a lot of people saying, well, but this one did this and this one did that. And we had the lockdowns and they didn't have the lockdowns. No, that's not really the case. Come on. Because this is not a political issue that I'm talking about here. Something much greater. It's not just these guys want to lock down and these guys didn't, or these guys, you know, it probably had to do with the way that they acted in Germany as a people. how they really dealt with this whole entire pandemic from the beginning. And that's probably why over the last several days, we've had 40,000 new cases of COVID a day, and Germany has 1,800. Now, I'm probably going to hit some ears that are saying, no, well, we do a lot more testing than they do. Really? Do you really know that for a fact? Let's not get into this ridiculousness. Let's just use the information that we have. If the information is flawed, by the way, then the problem is that the information is going to be a problem anyway. What I mean by that is we have to utilize information that is available to us on a readily accessible basis in order to make decisions. And if we're going to go down the road that the information is wrong, whether it be by Germany, whether it be by the US, because either one could be wrong, and whether we say that, well, China lies all the time, but yet what we do know is that is the information that is being utilized by investment managers across the world to make decisions, because that is the information that is at hand. And if you try to say, because you know something somehow, because you've read it on Facebook or Twitter or Bloomberg or Fox or CNN or I don't know where, you read a snippet and you believe this to be true and you're not investing the way that other people are that see it much differently and you're not making money and you're not benefiting from it, shame on you. Now, there's a lot of things that you have to look at and you have to research and use your own insights into making a decision, but let's not just throw away what we're seeing about facts. The U.S. has 40,000 or so new cases per day. Germany has 1,800. 83 million people in Germany, 330 million people here. So you do the math. So even with all this going on, what's really fascinating to know is that German confidence, consumer confidence, the highest it's been, I went back 10, 11 years. I didn't see a number anywhere near this. So there's something going on that's a little bit different, whatever that may be. And I don't think it's just in Germany. Their death rate, they had 100. We've had, 1,800 a day or 2,000 a day. So it's not just like the numbers are lying that we're doing more testing because we have deaths too. We have death data. So stop for a moment, take a breath. You may be infuriated if you're on one side of the track or on the other. And let's just try to stop, take a breath, and focus in on the facts. Now, why I bring this up with relation of the markets is not to piss you off or get you crazy or make you surprised or get you upset. Because what I want to share with you is that even with consumer confidence that is depressed right now, here in the United States, we're going to see a number next week on the University of Michigan preliminary for September, we saw that there are areas in the market that seem to be attracting some spending. And when I talk about the markets in that in respect, I talk about the economy. Well, we know that the stock market's been up, of course. Yes, we know that. But what about real estate? Have you seen what's going on there? Pretty fascinating numbers. And if you want to look at some of the changes that are happening within markets as consumer preferences start to change, a lot of it's due to low interest rates. And what that is doing is it is clearly bubbling up some of the economy. I mean, real estate is booming. Here's some facts that I recently pulled out, okay? The U.S. median home price index increased 13% in a last update from Redfin, 13% from 2019 to $319,000. Here are some other major takeaways from a report that they put in on a review of 434 U.S. metro areas during a four-week period ending September 6th. If you want to really have something to say that, we're seeing something happening here, where are the areas that are really benefiting from these low interest rates, aside from the stock market? Where are the possible problems coming in? Where are the possible opportunities coming in? Well, check this out. Pending home sales climbed 28% year over year, the largest increase since the 4 weeks ending August 2nd, 2015. New listings of homes for sales were up 9% from a year ago, the largest increase since the 4 weeks during December 2015. Active listings, which is the number of homes listed for sale at any point during the period, fell 28% from 2019 to an all-time low. Kind of interesting. The year-over-year decline has been about the same for the past couple of months. So we have less inventory on the market, but more sales in terms of things picking up, right? So active listings dropped, but also one of the reasons active listings dropped is because people are gulping these things down like water. Because 46.4% of the homes that went under contract had accepted an offer within the first 2 weeks on the market, which is the highest level since at least 2012. The average sale to list price ratio, which measures how close homes are selling to the asking price, rose to, hold on to your seats here, 99.3%, an all-time high and a full percentage point higher than a year ago. And for the week ending September 6th, the seasonally adjusted Redfin Home Buyer Demand Index was up 21% from pre-pandemic levels back in January and February. But home price growth this high is making the housing market especially difficult for first-time home buyers right now, said the report. So that's kind of something we talked about on DH Unplugged this week. We talked about where are some of the possible bubbles coming from. Listen, there's still a lack of inventory on the market. There's still a lot of demand because people are moving out of the city centers, the metros. You know, this deurbanization trend that's going on is starting to move over. And my point to you here is that there, with all that's happening here, with confidence being low as it is, with us not really being able to tackle all the ways to get this thing under control, there seems to be places that you can find to invest in, make money in. Real estate, just kind of a conceptual one of where people are gravitating to right now. And we know that there are others. But I find it really fascinating when I talk to people, they're like looking around and everything's really bad. Everything may be bad in your area, but there are areas around the world, around the state, maybe around the country, that are actually doing a lot better and are finding ways, more importantly, to adapt. That's what this discussion and the bottom line of this all is. The idea of adapting. I've talked to more people over the last several months who have talked about that, unfortunately, they sold out kind of in March and April. They didn't find a way to adapt into where we are in the markets today. Now, I'm not going to go through all the discussion of the 1 foot in, 1 foot out, and the dollar cost averaging that we talk about. We've talked about that a few times over the last number of episodes, and we really had one episode way back that we really focused in on this whole idea of how to get back in the markets. But you have to adapt in the world of investing. If you don't get anything else, and if you're able to hear after my COVID and U.S. versus Germany discussion, if you're able to refocus and you haven't turned off the show by now, the one thing I want you to take away right now so far from this discussion, here we are in the second week of September 2020, is you need to adapt. You need to find a way to constantly bob and weave and understand that their market is an ever-changing dynamic that will test you. It will constantly test you. And if you're unable to adapt, well, you need to figure out a different risk profile and a way of doing things. Doesn't mean you don't need to invest. You just need to figure out a different way of developing your portfolio. So the question is, are we actually seeing bubbles? You know what? Yes, some areas we're seeing bubblies, but the bubbles are not necessarily bubbles that are traditional. What I see is a blown-up balloon that is starting to bulge in certain areas out there. Yes, we talked about this to death, about the technology shares and other areas of the markets, that PE ratios and PEG ratios and valuation metrics are just and have been insane. So just bulge that out a little bit. We're seeing that there's another bulge in the single-family home area with prices that we just talked about with Redfin, giving us the report that we're seeing massive increases of homes, a 13% increase from 2019 on average. Okay, but on the other side, you have commercial real estate, which is being sucked in. It's a depression into the balloon. So that bubble on one side of that warping of the balloon is happening, and that's why this is such a different time. So are we seeing bubbles? And I guess the question is, why do they happen? We're going to get to that. But I think before we do that, I think it's a good time to talk about Masterworks. And Masterworks, we had the CEO and founder of Masterworks on the show not too long ago. And, you know, I think we all know this probably, but 90% of all developed government bonds are yielding under 1%, right? That we know that. We know that cash accounts aren't any better. I mean, if you're lucky, if you're really lucky, you're able to get, what, 60, 70 basis points on a savings account. And money has to go somewhere, right? And some bonds, other than providing a hedge, don't really provide a lot right now for people. So preserving your wealth is as hard as it's ever been. And that's where Masterworks comes in. If you're looking to diversify outside the market, then take a look at Masterworks. They are making it possible for you to invest in great art and artworks by Banksy, Warhol, Cause. Art is totaling about a $1.7 trillion asset class. And by all metrics, according to Citibank, it's outperformed the S&P by 180% between 2000 and 2018, which almost no correlation, by the way, to the stock market. So if you're already investing in your 401k every 2 weeks and you're looking for an alternative asset class, head to masterworks.io and use promo code TDI because that will enable you to skip the 25,000-person waitlist. Again, that's masterworks.io, promo code TDI. Please see important disclaimers at masterworks.io/disclaimer. So now, are we seeing these bubbles? And the question I asked was, why do they happen? I think it all happens to do with the whole idea of moral hazard. That's really the whole point here, right? The idea of moral hazard in a market. And they're created when there's a belief that there's no risk. There's this kind of concept out there that, you know, if I invest in that and there's no risk because that person or that party is in fact going to support me, hey, why not? Let's put more money. You know, some people think of an arbitrage situation where there's no way I can lose money on this deal because I got this side, that side covered, and let's put a lot of money in it. Creating moral hazards. Because you think that risk will be, well, abated or just held down, I guess. And in this case we have right now, well, that risk that's being held down, that kind hand that is holding it all up right now is the Fed. Now, said another way, moral hazards can exist when a party to a contract can take risks without they don't have to suffer consequences. So that's a big issue. So what you have right there is, I guess, the core definition of a moral hazard. When it comes to investing, we're not talking about the rest of what goes on in the world, but when it comes to investing, listen, we've been seeing, I'm going to start a war with this guy, but we're seeing that this guy, David Portnoy, this character, trying to tempt the market gods the way it looks to me with this whole idea with stocks only go up. Don't listen to the suits. Let me eat a little pizza and have a little ice cream and, of course, some watermelon, shove it in my face and pretend that I know anything about investing rather than gambling. Probably a real good guy for gambling, for betting on sports betting. I'm all in for that. But this whole idea of grabbing three or four different Scrabble tiles and putting them together just to buy the stock and having no response to the idea that there's risk and just if something goes down, keep on buying it. Listen, I'm not going to give him any more airtime on this because it's really, I find it really poor taste what he's doing. And this whole idea of what he's doing, sucking in to pay him for something. It's all a game to pay him for something, right? It's sucking in poor victims is what it's doing to invest in stocks without any idea of the consequences and fear of losing. Again, creating a moral hazard. That's the definition right there. If we believe that stocks only go up, is that not what we just talked about? The whole idea, the essence of what a moral hazard concept is? And the end product of a moral hazard when it comes to investing is brokenness. Losses. We all know there's risk in the markets, and the idea the Fed really has their hand out to back markets. Okay, I got that. And they're really there for a pretty treacherous condition, something that is really off the charts in terms of a systematic situation, not one stock or two stock. That's not what the Fed's there for right now, at least. But what they're there for is for a systematic breakdown and where they are able to provide a significant amount of overall support to the markets, but really in a blunt instrument style. Okay, so while they're there, maybe not in the short term, but the longer term, that we have this whole moral hazard going on, maybe the short-term nature of what we're doing right now, not a big deal. But the longer the condition goes on, the longer the Fed has the back of, well, we'll call it investors, but of the markets, of the economy, of the banks, of the bonds, of the states, of the corporates. You know, the list goes on and on and on because you know why? We have trillions of dollars to do so. And as long as we have that going on, the problem is that we have a ever-growing situation where the worse the moral risk will expand and the more people will get involved in margin and leverage up to a point that we will see when things get ugly, because there's always a cycle. I'm not saying it's tomorrow. I'm not, you know, listen, let's be honest with each other. If you really think that stocks only go up, what are you listening to this show for? We know there are cycles. Look at tech. Prices are, yeah, they're a lot higher than they were at the beginning of the year, or they were last year or whatever. But look at this significant sell-off. And if you bought at the wrong time right now, while maybe holding for the next 2, 3, 4 years may do well for you, or the next 2, 3 months, the fact is this big sell-off that we sold, you know, 10% for Apple, 30% for Tesla. Why did that happen? We know we talked about this, the whole idea that SoftBank was pushing up the mega cap tech names with billions of dollars of call options, causing the sellers of those options to hedge and buy stocks, further pushing up the price of those stocks was a warning shot. I mean, right across the bow. And if you didn't pick that up when we started finding out about this last, let's call it Tuesday, late Tuesday, you're not paying attention to what's going on. And that's not you. You're a disciplined investor and you are doing that, but you may not understand it. So let me break it down and tell you what's going on with this. What's happened is, because it was very surprising to me when I saw those stocks, you know the names, you know the FANG names and all that, just launching at the beginning of the week. And there was this, you know, when we started to see this happen last week. And there was kind of this, or 2 weeks ago, it was, you know, the day I'm talking about where we saw that massive move of that. And we talked a little bit about this whole thing. But again, I just want to clarify what happened was manipulation of the stock market by someone who had excessive amounts of money because they were being funded by the various central banks with a very low interest rate, causing what we talked about, a moral hazard. The moral hazard that was created was the thought that SoftBank could just push the markets unlimited to unlimited amounts in the limited directions with the significant amount of money they had with no repercussions to the downside. Now we see that they are rethinking their option strategy. That was the latest news item that came out on Friday. But this is excessive speculation they put on with free money, money on the cheap, with a seemingly unlimited supply. The fact is that, again, once we start believing that the data or fundamentals doesn't matter, it's time to step back and consider what's really going on. And that's what they didn't do. They bought right into their own crazy notion that always goes up. And I'm not going to talk about this whole K recovery conversation here, but you want to consider right now that, yes, there is a differential, and this time is a bit different, although not, at least in the short term it is, but not, you know, you got to look at the longer term. But you want to consider the social prices, the social and moral risk that's involved in believing that stocks only go one way and that you have the Fed behind you is what's causing some of the excessive speculation. And it's created the port noise and it's created the SoftBank's son, who is you know, building wealth in a quasi-pyramid scheme by investing more money in the same asset, pushing up the price yourself, hoping to one day get out of it by being sold to some sucker down the road at a much higher price. Reminds me of two famous quotes, what we just talked about, right? I just talked about this time is not the same, but if you remember, Sir John Templeton said the four most dangerous words of investing are, this time is different. And the other thing it kind of reminds me of is when Warren Buffett says he's going to tell you how to become rich. Just to shut the doors, be fearful when others are greedy, be greedy when others are fearful. Remember the blood in the streets conversation, the comments that were made? You know, buy when there's blood in the streets, but you know what we're seeing right now is just the antithesis of that. We're seeing a little bit of bloodshed over the last couple of weeks in tech shares. We're not going to cry over that because really it just took us back a couple of weeks. And did we really get hurt by it? Not really. No. I mean, it was just a little takeoff of where we are. We still have a lot of excess. We did see a nice rotation to value finally over the last few weeks on a comparative basis where value didn't necessarily go up, but it definitely did not go down as much as growth. And that's good. That's what we were trying to achieve with some of our positioning in value orientation in our portfolios. But I think that right now we have to be just aware of the potential for moral hazards, for excess speculation risk. I think, if my memory serves me correctly, I'm not sure if I talked about this. I know I saw it. I know I talked about it at least with myself. I don't know if that qualifies. But what I did talk about was the whole idea that we saw a pretty big spike in margin leverage in accounts, in portfolios that were being used over the last month and a half or so. And that was really concerning me that I saw that because now we're starting to see that the speculative nature of the markets are starting to hit. In other words, before, let's call it, let's say the drop came what? In March, March 23rd was the drop bottom. Let's call May. Let's say May when we start to see the recovery. Okay, the speculative nature started after that. Let's call it starting in June. The excess speculation where we started to see a rise in margin and leverage in portfolios and people believing that stocks go to the moon and don't come down and only go up. And all of this really started to play out. So that corrective action, possibly getting us back into normal levels, has some way to go. In fact, who was it this week? You know, I don't remember the name of the firm. Friday afternoon, a quick drop of data. There was a fair value calculation that valued the Dow Jones Industrial Average close to about 22,000. That's about 5,000 points from where we are now, which is about a 20% drop. Now, is that right? Is that wrong? I don't know. Fact is, we do know if you look closely at any real serious metric that can be quantified that there's a little bit of froth going on. I've talked about this so much lately, and you may think I'm really negative on the markets, but I've told you, no. Am I negative? Short term, maybe. Am I negative long term? Not really. I know how stocks react, but you have to position yourself right throughout this process. That's the reason why I talked to you about this. If we can eliminate all the potholes, we have a pretty smooth ride. Now, you can't ever eliminate all the potholes, but if we can eliminate where there is a significant crater, if we can kind of move away from the areas that we find that there is thin ice, if we can kind of veer away and stay all the way away from a canyon, that a cliff, well, then that's good. Because the rest of it's only good news. You know, if you take out all the bad news, we only get good news. If we take out all the bad action, well, we'll be left with some of the good action. Can't really happen. You're going to hit a speed bump every once in a while. Just stay away from the sinkhole. You're going to hit a crack in the road, but stay away from the cliff. That's what we're talking about. So I think that we really have to focus in on the reality of what's going on and stop trying to justify the unjustifiable. And that's not just with the markets, but that's also with the reality of what's going on here in our country and how we have not taken personal responsibility, not all of us, but some of us, for others and for the spread and for the cure and for the stopping and for the slowing and for what we do in our actions and what that repercussions are. If we're not happy while things as things are going, let's change it. I'm not going to sit here and try to talk you in or out of schools should be open, schools should be closed, restaurants should be open, restaurants should be closed. If nothing else, let's just take personal responsibility. And if that is not possible, then we're going to have results like we see now. And therefore, what we do as investors is we adapt. We constantly adapt. And by doing so, that's how we avoid all the pitfalls as much as possible. There's always pitfalls. Let's get that straight. Let's not try to pretend there's not. There's always something like, you know, that should have been good. I think that's going to be, for example, our value orientation through this process, through the, we'll call it 2020 for a second, is not really working. It should have. It was the safer, quote unquote, safer side. But no, this is a, you know, kind of a strange mix. It did not work out as well at all as it should. But, you know, again, the point is trying to at least do something here, be proactive in a manner so that you can, in fact, be situated properly. So I want you to really consider all the things we talked about. We talked about where we are from a consumer confidence standpoint, where we are from an unemployment standpoint, where we are in terms of adapting, where the idea of moral hazard and excess risk speculation, think of that for a minute, just for a moment, take away from this discussion today, the idea that we have a lot happening. We have a lot being thrown at us. I mean, trying to really understand everything that's going on right now with the news cycle is trying to take a sip out of an open water hydrant. It's impossible. The news, whether we believe it or not, and information, whether we believe it or not, is all around us constantly slamming into us. It's very difficult to make very good quality decisions unless you turn it off for a little while. Spend a little time, as one of my good friends would say, just staring at a mountain for a little while. You know, take a day to stare at a mountain. Don't do excessive exercise or try to, you know, do something that's really outside the bounds. Just chill. Reflect. Take it all in. The majesty. And just let things come into your mind slowly and what you're thinking. And then come back and write it down. And come up with strategies, come up with ideas. You have to do it with a clean head. And with all this happening all at once, it's very difficult. So adapt, clear-headedness, and you know, keep on the idea that there are moral hazards that you do not want to get involved in. All right, we're going to segue to economics that are coming next week. And this is going to be pretty much a data dump that we're going to be seeing because there's going to be this week we had hardly anything, right? So there's going to be a data dump. There's going to be some news. I mean, we already saw that over the weekend, the AstraZeneca vaccine trial that was halted or paused because of a very significant illness of one of the patients that were taking the drug, not the placebo, but is back up and running. So they're back up and running with that. We'll see how that plays out. It's not really, I guess, I've read both sides, but it doesn't seem like it's really a common occurrence for for a study to stop. But I mean, they're moving at light speed here, and they're trying to get this done as soon as possible. So some of the safety protocols and the time constraints and all that are just a little bit different. So we have to give it a little bit of a break here. And AstraZeneca over the weekend came up with that they are restarting. So that should help some of the markets. It may definitely help your back to normal trades. it may also dump on some of the tech trades once again. All right. So we're going to talk about economics. All right. We have, like I said, a lot happening. There's nothing on Monday, but Tuesday, we have import and export prices, industrial production, capacity utilization. On Wednesday, we have retail sales, business inventories, and more importantly than all this, yes, folks, another Federal Open Market Committee, the FOMC, rate decision. And what that means for all of us right now is not so important, the actual rate decision, because we know they're not going to change things right now. What's really important is going to be the after party, the 2:30 press conference, where once again, sure as we are here today, listening and wherever you are, is going to be a discussion about the inflation averaging and trying to pound that into our heads once again, just over and over and over with the same thing, that they're going to hold rates down for an extended period of time for long, long, long. They're not thinking about raising rates for a long period of time, et cetera, et cetera. On Thursday, we have initial claims, housing starts, the Philly Fed Index Friday, leading indicators, as I mentioned earlier. We also have the University of Michigan September consumer confidence numbers that will be coming out as well. So what I'm really curious about is not so much all these economics. They're important, but I think that a lot of people are, again, looking through some of this, thinking that, you know, things will get better slowly but surely over time. Over time. Time heals all wounds, right? What I'm really curious about is how the next stimulus bill is going to be handled. Because there was a $300 billion plan that was really, a skinny plan that was put forth by the Republicans that failed, as the Democrats won about 10 times that amount, the $3 trillion or so. The White House is looking at about $1.2 trillion. All these numbers are up for grabs. I mean, they kind of slide either way, up and down, depending on, you know, where the wind is blowing. But right now it seems to be a bit of a political football. The fact of the matter is that you gotta wonder. What am I talking about here? Well, we're so close to the election. We got 50 days or so to the election. And I mean, is this a way that the Democrats are trying to bring down the economy that a lot of people are talking about, closing in on election or to make Trump look bad? You know, as crazy as that sounds, we only got 2 months. And if we have executive orders already in place for the $300 per week of unemployment compensation that is being paid by the federal government, well, maybe we can wait a little longer for some of this. I mean, I think it's being a little bit excessive and greedy, or I don't know what it would be called. I would think it's reckless. For us right now to have a $3 trillion bill being considered due to the fact of, well, how much has already been put in and how much has hit the system and how much we've already put in, not only through fiscal stimulus, but monetary stimulus as well. It's also concerning that we're thinking about putting in or a new $3 trillion. It wasn't $3 trillion. It was $3 trillion plus. Because we know it takes months and months and months for actually the stimulus to really get into the economy. And putting too much in is just as dangerous as not putting in enough. And if, in fact, we see that moral hazards are one of the byproducts of this kind of move, and we see that there's already investigations, a lot of them, going on by the government into the PPP loan, and we see even JP Morgan coming out. We're talking about how employees have abused some of the PPP provisions, and the customers have done the same, and they're doing internal investigations. Obviously, something is wrong. It's wrong. Not wrong, but wrong. I'm not quite sure if $100 trillion, I don't know what the right number is. But it seems that another $3 trillion does seem a little bit hot right now. And standing on ceremony, trying not to get this done, I understand it is politics to a degree. But at the same time, it seems like a trillion. That's not pocket change. We're talking about serious money here. And like I said, the good news is I'm starting to hear that the $300 per week, the executive order that was signed by Trump, which, again, nobody really knows if he has the authorization to do so, but nobody's fighting him either. The good news is that it's starting to make their ways into people's bank accounts. I've heard several people tell me that they started to get their money over the past few weeks. I don't know if this is enough. $300 plus the state benefits, probably not for some people, probably right for other people. But there's no way in a very quick-handed method, in a way to get people money to survive. We're not able to do all the fine mathematical calculations. This is a broad-brushed approach to make sure people have food on the table. Let's be honest. So we have to wonder, how long is this $300 really going to last for those that have been, well, displaced? And I'm not talking about just lost their job and may come back. I'm talking about permanently displaced. And what does that do to consumption numbers? That's going to be a big question, which obviously brings me to the next point of, will we ever see sub 4% unemployment in the near future? And that's been a question that's been going around a lot. From what I can see, it seems unlikely. If Fauci and others are thinking that we're not going to get back to normal from a year from now, then there's going to be an enormous amount of businesses that won't be able to survive. Especially the travel and the leisure, the dining, entertainment industries. Just think about it. Right now, they're hanging on by a thread, but if in fact there isn't going to be the ability for them to really get back to normal, this is a huge part of the labor market. And we need to address this. There's no question about that. Because if you have a situation where business is closed like this, where are those workers going to go? Is there another part of the market that's going to be able to pick up that labor market slack? There's a question that's going to linger for some time. And we're starting to see already a break in the love of stay at home. Work from home, I should say. Not stay at home. We don't love staying at home. A lot of people love working from home. But one of the things that's starting to happen is there's changes. And just this week, we saw that companies like VMware and Twitter are saying that remote employees will need to accept pay reductions if they leave certain areas. For example, both VMware and Twitter announced that if remote employees leave the Bay Area, they will have to take a pay cut. Not exactly sure what that's all about. I mean, remote is remote, right? Maybe the thought is, well, you're temporarily working remotely and we'll eventually get you back to the office. And if you move out of the area, well, then you can't come back to the office. And if that's the fact, we're going to have to hire somebody. It's going to cost us money for training. It's going to cost us all sorts of stuff. In addition to with the cost we have right now. So therefore, you need to take it on the chin. You need to stay there. Wow. I mean, it's also been noticeable that the shine is starting to wear off from working at home. I mean, all day working in the house and the night, same place, so time gets, I mean, monotonous. And you have to wonder what kind of impact this has on productivity. So there's a lot of questions that are unanswered right now, but we're starting to see some weird trends when it comes to this remote working all of a sudden. So, hopefully we'll get this vaccine. I mean, I don't think it's going to be at the end of the year or before the election. I think that's just, there's no way. First of all, even if you approve the vaccine today, there's no way you can get that dosage out to the majority of people or even to a significant number of people, before the election. You're not going to get it ready or prepared, so it's just not going to happen. 50 days to finish up a phase three and even phase two into a phase three. Very hopeful, let's just say that. So be prepared. Watch for moral hazards. Watch for excess speculation. Adjust. Adapt. Stay away from the potholes, the sinkholes, and the cliffs. That's my message for you today. I want to thank you. We have a great guest coming up next week. Linda Raschke, one of the most well-known technical analysis experts will be on the show next week. This Monday coming up, we restart again the Monday pop-up Q&A webinars. That's at 4:30 in the afternoon on Mondays, where you can ask any question, anything that you want. You can sign up over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Just look at the top right sidebar on top And you'll see that there is a place to register for that. You'll get a reminder. You can join. We have it every week. Join when you want. If you have a question, chime in. It's all good. Thank you so much for joining me. And I am going to see you next week. Discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.